You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Sandra Ingerman. Sandra has been teaching for over 30 years. She teaches workshops internationally on shamanic journeying, healing, and reversing environmental pollution using spiritual methods. Sandra is a licensed marriage and family therapist and professional mental health counselor. She is also a board-certified expert on traumatic stress as well as certified in acute traumatic stress management. She is also the author of 8 books, including Soul Retrieval, Medicine for the Earth, Shamanic Journeying, A Beginner's Guide, How to Heal Toxic Thoughts, The Shaman's Toolkit, and Awakening to the Spirit World, The Shamanic Path of Direct Revelation. She also has 6 audio programs, including Shamanic Meditations, Guided Journeys for Insight, Vision, and Healing, Soul Journeys, Music for Shamanic Practice, and Shamanic Visioning. You can find out more on her website and read the articles which she has written and some for Huffington Post at www.sandraingerman.com. So with that introduction, let's welcome Sandra to the show now.
Thank you.
Hi, Sandra. How are you?
I am good. It's great to be on your show, Lance.
Oh, thank you. It's great to have you. Well, you know, this was a happy circumstance. Again, once again, synchronicity led the way. And on my last trip to Washington State, a good friend of mine had been talking about soul retrieval, and she mentioned your name and said that I really needed to read your book and suggested you as a guest. So she had learned about soul retrieval through your book, and so that's exactly what I did. And then I, in turn, have a friend who is working on herself and has issues that needed to be addressed. So I bought her a copy, and she's having some incredible results with it. So I love your book, and it really opened my eyes to what's going on, you know, at least this part of the picture, with our souls, because it seems that so many people are not present or just not fully alive or engaged, or looking for Mr. Right or Miss Right and, you know, twin flames and twin souls and all that. And I'm wondering if some of that isn't caused by part of the soul having been left behind during a traumatic incident. So I'm going to let you open up and explain what soul retrieval is and what happens and how it happens.
Absolutely. So shamanism works with the spiritual aspect of illness. And so shamanism works with psychotherapy and medicine. And when we diagnose illness from a shamanic perspective, we're looking at what is out of balance on a spiritual level. And when you look at most shamanic cultures around the world, not all, but most of them, they look at the major cause of illness as due to the loss of the soul. And the definition of soul that I'm using is soul is our essence. It's our life force. It's that part of ourselves that keeps us alive. Mm-hmm. And from a shamanic perspective, whenever we suffer an emotional or physical trauma, a piece of our soul flees our body in order to survive the experience. And so I always use the same example. It seems to have great meaning to me. If I'm going to be on a head-on car collision, the very last place I want to be at the point of impact is in my body. My body, my psyche couldn't handle that kind of shock. And so we have this brilliant self-protect mechanism. We go away while the trauma is occurring. And so in our culture, things that could cause soul loss would be any kind of abuse, sexual, physical, emotional abuse, being in a war, being in an accident, surgery, death of a loved one, grief, anything that causes shock. From a shamanic point of view, alarm clocks cause soul loss, which I think many of us can relate to, you know, where we get that shock and it feels like it takes you a while to feel like you're back in your body again. And so what happens is a piece of our soul leaves our body in order to survive the experience, and classic symptoms of soul loss would be dissociation and what you were describing at the beginning of the show of people not feeling present in their bodies, PTSD, immune deficiency kinds of issues, depression, suicidal tendencies, addictions, like you were talking about at the beginning of the show. We look for either substances or relationships, or if I just had another car or had another house or, you know, had more material objects, I would feel whole, I would feel good. Those are all symptoms of soul loss. Anybody who ever says the words to me, "I've never been the same since," and they don't mean that in a good way, would be a symptom of soul loss. And so from a shamanic point of view, it's the role of the shaman to travel into the invisible realms where the soul has fled to and track it down, and then physically actually return it to the body again. And when you look at different shamanic cultures around the world, shamans have different ceremonies to call back the soul and return the soul back to the body again. The method that I work with, which is one of the classic methods, is to actually identify where the soul has gone, bring it back into this reality, and actually blow it physically into the heart and into the crown of the person, seeing that soul completely filling up every cell of their being. So it's a very powerful method, and it's been, I've been teaching this way of working since the 1980s, and thousands of people have just gotten a tremendous amount of help with having a soul retrieval performed and then combining it with either other spiritual practices or other methods to look at what changes you need to make in your life in order to create long-term healing, you know, instead of a short-term healing. In our culture, the shadow side of people looking for shamanic healing is people think the shaman's going to wave a magic wand over them and they don't have to do anything after that. And shamans do. They perform incredible healings, but then it is the responsibility of the client to do some further work
to really
integrate that soul.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
given the vast numbers of people who have been, and I know that the numbers are not accurate because they've been understated, but all of the people who have been traumatized by sexual abuse, the pedophilia rings, there's a sex ring, a global sex ring that operates all over the world, offering children and adults. You know, there are, I mean, all of these things are going on. And, of course, you have the bedroom community, which they called it the bedroom community for a reason. There's a lot going on with parents and their kids that remains hidden and concealed. So, what would you say the statistics might be on the number of people who are really at a disadvantage or who could use some kind of guidance in soul retrieval?
Well, soul retrieval is really helpful with sexual abuse. And when I first got my start in the 1980s, the very first client that I worked with was where my helping spirit. In shamanism, we work with helping spirits who help us perform healing work. showed me how she had lost her soul and told me he was going to teach me how to do a soul retrieval, and that's how I got my start. And she had really remarkable results because she had felt so out of her body, and all of a sudden she was really in and present. And so I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I kind of put out a underground call in the community and said I was doing these free healings. I was just experimenting with this method to see if it worked. And I was working with people who had experienced sexual abuse, and later I realized it worked with all forms of abuse, and I, you know, expanded my practice and my writing. But I started out working with people with sexual abuse. And, you know, it was really helpful because what happens oftentimes when people go through sexual abuse is oftentimes they even remember experiencing as if they're looking down on their body as when the trauma is occurring, and like they're outside of their body, which they are. You know, that's a classic description in soul retrieval. And a lot of people have spent years and years and years in psychotherapy, and psychotherapy is wonderful and it works well with shamanic healing, but if you're dealing with a person who hasn't been brought back into their body yet, psychotherapy is only going to go so far. And so, again, my caution is with people who have been seriously abused, like what you're talking about in the global sex rings that we're seeing. I mean, the statistics are huge on that. You know, it's not going to be a one-time cure. There are other things that are going to be needed to be integrated into the healing process, but you do have to bring a person back into their body in order to be successful with any other aspects of healing.
It almost seems as if this would be a prerequisite to continuing your healing and evolutionary journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you look at our culture today, you know, you look at the addictions and how people, you know, when you look at politics in America and how corporate the corporate mind works, you actually hear the statement that money is more important than life. And anytime anybody says the words, money is more important than life, they're not in their bodies. If you're fully in your body, you would never say such a statement. You know, I mean,
I never said it that way.
It's a very dissociated way of looking at the world. You know, material objects are more important than, you know, the sacredness of life, animal life, plant life, human life, all life. All life. And so it is really important. The point is that in a modern-day culture, we really focus on physical healing, traditional medicine, psychotherapy, but we've left out, which was not part of ancient cultures, but in a modern-day world, we no longer look at the healing, spiritual methods of healing and incorporating body, mind, and spirit as kind of a whole gestalt in how we look at healing a person. And so it's been really important at this time to look at incorporating ways of bringing back the soul. And there are so many different ways to do that. I've met so many practitioners who work differently than I do. I'm not saying there's one way to do it, but I do believe it's very important for our evolution of consciousness to get back into our bodies and be present. I know it was for me. Having a soul retrieval was really important because when you're out of your body most of the time, when you're disconnected from your body most of the time, you can almost become apathetic or not notice what isn't working in your life because you're not here to really notice what's not working. And when you're fully present in your body, all of a sudden you wake up one day and you go, this doesn't work. My relationships aren't working. My work isn't working. You know, whatever.
You know the truth about things.
Yeah, and you start to look at what do I need to change?
Yeah.
What different kinds of relationships, people, friends do I need to bring into my life? What kinds of situations do I need to bring into my life that are going to support my health and well-being instead of being kind of, well, you're kind of here and you're kind of not here, and so you don't really notice, you don't get the full impact of what's not working in your life, and you don't have to. You can stay kind of asleep in mm-hmm. your life.
Yes, and it does seem that the majority of people have chosen to stay asleep.
Yes, yes. And when you look at when you look at indigenous cultures and you look at people in indigenous cultures, there's a light shining out of their eyes, and it has nothing to do with the world that they live in. They could be very poor, and they could be having all kinds of struggles, but there's a joy coming out of their eyes that we just do not see in this culture.
Right.
You know, we really see people looking with a dazed look as if
right.
they're not here. And I think part of that is soul loss, and part of that is that we have stopped exploring, you know, basically because how we were raised in this culture of fit in with the status quo, don't stand out, you know, just get by in life. We're no
right.
longer looking at what would bring passion and meaning back into our lives again, which is very serious work that I always have my clients and teach my students. After a soul retrieval, once you're back in your body, you really have to look at what would bring passion and meaning back into your life again so that you do get that light back in your eyes.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, it's so important to to be able to begin to understand that the invisible realms are as real or more real than the hologram that we are in with our televisions and texting and cell phones and the rest of it, and that those worlds are magical. And when we're little kids, we know that, and we're so quickly taught, don't play with your food, you don't do this, don't do that, and we're shut down, and then you're sent off to school, and before you know it, you're working in a corporation, and you're saying things like, you know, money is more important than life.
Right, right. Yeah, well, you know, when we were little kids, we were told to stop dreaming.
Oh,
and,
gee. Oh.
And we were told to that only what we can see, feel, hear, taste, smell on the tangible level is real.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else we've made up. And from a shamanic perspective, everything is made up. This world is made up. Life is a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And in shamanic cultures, it's understood that there are different levels of reality, and there are invisible worlds with helping compassionate spirits who really care about our growth, our evolution, and healing, and we can call on them for guidance. We can call on them for healing. Everything that exists is alive and has a spirit. So trees are alive and plants are alive and air is a living being and water is a living being. The sun is a living being. And you can step into the invisible realms and speak to the spirit that lives in all things, meaning the spirit that lives in nature, and you can talk to trees and plants and the animals and the insects and the reptiles and the sun.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And the elements, etc.
And
you realize that you have a deeper relationship with them. They're not just inanimate objects that happen to be in the world with us, but you can actually establish a deep relationship, and that brings back the magic of life again.
And Michael Harner talks about, he goes into depth about his experiences with ayahuasca and the world, those worlds that can be tapped into. And, of course, Graham Hancock and many others of note have legitimized it, and many people are experimenting with it. And those worlds are vast and real, and so we can open up to those and I live out in the country, and sometimes I will tune into the trees and the skies and the birds, and just the most amazing things will happen. You know, a firefly will come over, you know, a bee will land on my hand. You know, just interesting things that, you know, they're communicating, and I love that, and I give them my love. And let them know how much I appreciate their doing that, what they're doing, and for saying hello. And so I love that, those realms. I try to encourage that as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a couple of things that I wanted to share around that. One is many different shamanic cultures use plant spirit medicine or vision plants like ayahuasca or San Pedro or mushrooms to get their visions, and a lot of shamans just use drumming to enter into an altered state of consciousness. And vision plants are definitely a wonderful way to step in. But again, the shadow side in our culture is people who then start to believe that the only way they can do spiritual work or step into the invisible realms is if they take a vision plant. And you know, we become dependent. Some people become dependent on that. And so you really see a lot going on today in the world where it's kind of like, wait a second, you don't need to, you know, vision plants open up the doorway, and then there are other ways to keep that doorway open and to access the spiritual realms in your daily life without having to take plant spirits. I also, my own personal opinion is that it's important to make a pilgrimage to where these incredibly ancient plant spirits come from.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of people today rely on people traveling up from different countries with plant spirit medicine, and they weren't taught the correct diet or the, you know, correct preparation, and then they end up getting themselves into trouble. So we're actually seeing a lot of people get into trouble today because just how modern-day culture deals with things when things become popularized. I don't think, I think people can fill in the rest of the blanks there. The other thing I want to say is I love working with omens and teaching people how to work with omens. And nature, being in nature, is such healing balm. And it doesn't matter if you live in the country or if you live in the city. Nature is all around us. The earth is alive. The air is alive. Water is alive. The sun's alive. There's always a tree that you can reach out to or a plant, even if you live in the city. And when you start to do that, like you were describing, you start to get these incredible signs where you have a question and all of a sudden an animal will appear or an insect will land on your hand. Or
And they talk to you.
And they talk to you. Or if you have, you're wondering if you're making the right decision, you think about that decision and the clouds part and the sunbeams come shining down on you, or the wind comes and gives you a message, and it brings back such magic and beauty to life. You really step into a whole new dimension of reality when you start to work with the signs. And what I've learned is that the universe is constantly giving us signs, lighting our path of where to put our foot next. But again, in a modern-day culture, we've shut down and we don't notice, you know, the signs that are being given to us really moment to moment.
Well, it's like our lives are our own teachers, and it's like a magic carpet ride. If you can remain present to your life and be in the moment, then it's easier to recognize the signs when they come. And for me, they tend to start stocking up as synchronicities. And so when I start noticing synchronicities going off, a few in a row or a 10, sometimes 20, then I know that I'm seeing clearly and that I'm navigating my own life as a mirror. And so yeah, there's no question in my mind that I'm in the right place at the right time and that everything is in perfect harmony.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what starts to happen when you realize that there's more than just the tangible dimension, is you do start to live a life filled with harmony and beauty. And it starts to shift your perception about things. And when your perception changes, your reality changes. So you start to move into a place where you can see, feel, and appreciate more the beauty of life. And yes, we do, you know, there are a level of challenges and we see suffering around us, but there's also a lot of beauty around us that so many people are shut down to because we're trained to only, you know, focus on a certain level of awareness.
And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned when you change your perspective, and that brought to mind Carlos Castaneda's dialogues where he talks about you can change your perception by changing the assemblage points. And so there's a technique that he teaches in his work that allows you to shift your internal perspective, and when you do that, you're literally in another dimension.
Yeah, I haven't. I love Carlos Castaneda's books, and I read them a really long time ago. I'm one of those people who, one of the things I love about shamanism and shamanic journeying is that it's a practice of direct revelation, where once you make contact with your spirits, they'll show you everything you need to know. And I'm one of those people, you know, there's no right or wrong. You know, we all have to find our own way of learning and receiving knowledge. And I've always been, I was born a rebellious kid and don't like to listen to anybody.
And so that sounds familiar.
It's been really wonderful to have shamanic journeying in my life, where I have my helping spirits who I can turn to and say, how do I shift my perception, or show me ways that I can lead a healthier life, or show me ways that I can, you know, learn to integrate more spiritual practices into my life. And so I rely on my own intuitions, the information I get from nature, and the learnings that I get from the spiritual world. And some people really enjoy, you know, learning from teachers. Some people enjoy a blending of both, you know, doing a both and. And so I think it's really important for people to find what suits their personality and what works for them in helping them move forward.
Do you have any, have you written much about how people can begin to make that connection with their power animals and spirit guides? Because I know you speak about that a lot in your book.
Yeah, I actually wrote a book called Shamanic Journeying, A Beginner's Guide.
Okay, perfect.
So it gives all the instructions for shamanic journeying, and then has a drumming CD in the back of the book. You know, you can listen to that. And then there are people who don't like to read instructions. It's like, take me on a journey. So I recorded a CD through Sounds True called Shamanic Meditations, and those are guided journeys to help people find their power animals and teachers. And so there's a wealth of information. Awakening to the Spirit World also gives instructions on how to journey, and has a musical CD in the back with different instruments, different tracks for journeying. So in most of my later books, starting with Shamanic Journeying, A Beginner's Guide, I give instructions of how to. You know, I don't just talk about the spirit world. I teach people actually how to get into the spirit world. And I'm one of those people who I believe simple is the best way. So Shamanic Journeying, A Beginner's Guide, you know, gives really simple instructions that are not complex, and give a lot of freedom. I think one of the issues that comes up again in a modern day culture is people think there's a right way to journey and a wrong way to journey, and the power of shamanism is the lack of dogma, and really encouraging people to find their own ways. So if the instructions don't work for you, it doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It means you have a different way of accessing the spirit realm. So I'm always trying to get people to get out of the box. We put ourselves in boxes a lot, and we really limit what's possible for us of accessing the spiritual realms, which are so deep, because some people think that you have to see your journeys like a movie, you know, mm-hmm. seeing your power animal and all the scenery. People like myself, there are many of us who are more clairaudient, where we hear messages instead of see images, mm-hmm. or clairsentient, where you feel it in your bones, or you get a sensation
that's how I get it.
Yeah, and clairsentient is, you know, I mean, that's direct connection with the earth and with the spirit realms. And I watch so many people who are clairsentient say in workshops, you know, I've taught over 10,000 people how to journey, and I hear people say, I'm not doing it right because I'm not seeing anything. And I keep on saying to them, if you're clairsentient, you already graduated college.
Right.
And you're trying to get back to kindergarten, you know, it's like,
right.
But it's just, you know, we oftentimes just put ourselves in boxes instead of realizing that we all have psychic senses that are stronger at first. When you look at traditional shamans, they see, hear, feel, taste, smell in their journeys. They actually step into the invisible realms and experience the invisible realms as if we were taking a walk in a park or in nature where all your senses are alive. And that's where I'm trying to get people to get to, is to really open up all their senses, because in a modern day world, we've really deadened our senses quite a bit.
Well, and plus we have so many more senses than the five that we are familiar with. And when we're stuck in a box of limitations, we're unable to imagine anything but what's put into the box. And that's put in there by, you know, the media and radio and your peers and the rest of it. And it's a pretty limited space to operate in, and you can't really create visions and dreams and use your imagination if you're in the box. So those are the things that help us to create the kind of world that we'd like to have, and
mm-hmm.
not the one that we are just accepting, because if we do it that way, we're likely to end up with the world that we have now.
Right.
Worse.
Right. Well, what people don't realize, in shamanism, it, as I said earlier, it's believed that we're dreaming this world into being, and how we do that is with our imagination. And how we do that is with our daydreams, and our daydreams are made up of the thoughts and words that we loop throughout the day. And so what I really try to get people to look at is, we say we want peace. We say we want equality. We say we want certain things for the world. But if you stop and examine the thoughts and the words that you loop throughout the day, are they actually leading you to your desired outcome? How many people actually have peaceful thoughts throughout the day? You know, we say
mm-hmm.
we want peace, but what are you thinking about? And so what I try to teach people is that it's really important for us to be more conscious of what we're daydreaming. Because what we're daydreaming, we're actually creating. And so when you look at the world around us, we're kind of seeing this collective chaos.
Right.
Where if we were more attentive to the power of our thoughts and the words and how we talk to other people, as they were in shamanic cultures, so aware of what you're saying and what you're thinking, and really work with rephrasing and reframing, so that we actually do get to experience the world that we would like to dream into being.
Mm-hmm. Now, I had a question for you, because we talked about various ways that the soul will remove itself through shock or car accidents, trauma, rape, abuse, et cetera, et cetera. But there are other ways that it can be removed as well. Aren't there? There's soul theft. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole different category of soul manipulation. And I'm wondering if you have ever had any kind of experiences with any kind of negative forces or demonic forces that interplay with that process.
I personally stay away from getting into working with demonic forces, and the reason for that is when you work with shamanic journeying, you enter into transcendent realities, and mm-hmm. transcendent realities are non-dual, so you kind of step out of that good-evil mm-hmm. battleground. Mm-hmm. But soul theft is a very, it's a really fascinating topic, because in shamanic cultures, before people dropped bombs and engaged in warfare, you know, with all the equipment that we have today, warfare was done on a psychic level, and intrusions were sent to people, poisonous energies were sent to people that would make them ill, or mm-hmm. A piece of their soul was stolen in a way that would weaken them, mm-hmm. take power away from them, because when somebody steals your soul, you move into a weakened state emotionally mm-hmm. and physically. But in our culture, again, just like with we don't pay attention to our thoughts and words, we don't pay attention to our invisible behavior. And so what you see when you get into shamanic work is that we're dealing with soul stealing all the time. Mm-hmm. In relationships, when there's a breakup that's not mutual, one partner might steal the soul of another. When you get into shamanic journeying and you look at family systems, it's amazing to watch the soul stealing that goes on among siblings.
Mm-hmm,
you constantly hear people who know nothing about spiritual work say, my father stole my soul, my mother stole my soul, my grandfather stole my soul when I was abused. You hear, think of all the country western songs that talk about my lover stole my soul.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're constantly, jealousy is soul stealing. You know, you see somebody in a restaurant and you see them as a bright light. If I could just have some of that light. Or a depressed parent who really doesn't want to hurt their child, loves their child, but is depressed and a lack of energy, and sees this bubbling little spirit, you know, effervescent, and starts to think, if I could just have some of that energy for myself, and completely without any intention or consciousness can take a piece of the soul of a child. And so we're constantly seeing soul stealing in our culture, and people, some people are aware of it, and some people are not. And if you want to look at a broader level and really get out there, religions can steal our soul. Governments can steal our soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's how we control people. And I think it's the things that I try to teach people, clients and my students, is that, number one, not to get paranoid about people stealing your soul, because nobody can steal your soul unless you let them.
Mm-hmm.
When a child is very young, they might have to give up their soul for survival. You know, there's a tug of war going on and they have to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But as adults, we can say psychically, we don't have to say it out loud. You don't have to stand up in a restaurant and start screaming, you can't have my soul. but you can psychically.
Although I have heard that in a restaurant.
Right. But you can psychically put up a boundary. I teach people how to see themselves in a blue egg, or if you know about shamanic journeying, you fill up with the power of your animal. But you just say no.
Right.
And I think that it's really important. I think that as people get back their souls from a soul-stealing experience and have compassion for what causes a person, you know, because there's such a wound that
right.
would cause a person to try and steal somebody else's soul, and you can move into a compassionate place. I think that there's a domino effect of healing that goes on all the way back to our ancestry and already and forward to our descendants, because we stop passing down that behavior. So I think it's a really, really important topic. And some of the sickest people I work with are psychotherapists and people who are in the helping profession who don't really understand when a client is in a really desperate place, how they might pull on you energetically. And so a lot of that is where burnout comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And in relationships where we use the term of codependency or enmeshment, those are, you know, from a shamanic point of view, that would also be soul-stealing at the same time.
Mm. Right, right. There's a lot of codependence that's going on in the in the world as well. It seems that the United States is heavily codependent and, you know, almost like a bunch of recovering alcoholics that aren't recovering.
Well, yeah, there's a lot in their behavior. One of the most challenging populations I have to work with around soul stealing is mothers who do the reverse. You know, they give a part of their soul to their kids or to their spouses. And so I'm trying to educate, because in a lot of women were actually taught in invisible ways. Their mother didn't sit them down and say, to be a good mother, to be a good wife, you give up a part of yourself. But it's a message that many women pick up in this culture.
Oh.
And it's not healthy for anybody to give up a part of their soul, because, again, it disempowers you, but it's also not healthy for a child or a spouse, because you end up giving them energy that's unusable. It
right,
actually
right.
burdens them because they can't use that energy.
Right, right.
But it's really interesting how we learned a lot of dysfunctional behaviors by observing our parents and being conditioned by society at large. And we don't realize the psychic ramifications that it has on ourselves and our loved ones and the community around us.
Absolutely. Well, so now, what are some of the things that that you would like to share with us tonight that you find would be helpful for the listeners to? It could be a story, or it could be anything.
Well, I think that so many people feel disempowered right now that, you know, it seems like, you know, many people talk about things have gone too far, you know, we've gone over the line of balance, we're at the point of no return, and people look around at what they perceive as suffering of others and what's going on environmentally. And I think it's really important for everybody to understand that from a spiritual perspective, where we have power to create positive change right now is through the spiritual practices that we engage in.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
part of that has to do with finding some spiritual practice. It could be meditation, Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga, shamanic journeying, something that does put you in contact with more of the invisible realms, where you can start to look at changes that you can make in your own life that bring you back to a place of harmony and to a place of healing. In shamanism, it's really taught about the importance of aligning our thoughts and words to create the vision we want for ourselves in the world, and how we can work together as a global community to hold the vision. Right now, so many people are in a place of despair, but there's such power when people join together to hold the vision of what we do wish for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And shamanism teaches us what many spiritual traditions, it's one of the oldest teachings, is that the outer world is a reflection of our inner state. And if you want to change the outer world, you have to clean up your own inner state. And so
right.
looking at what are the thoughts and the words and the attitudes and the beliefs that you have that are being reflected back in the outer world. Are you thinking defeatist and self-sabotaging thoughts throughout the day and using those kinds of words? And what are you sending? What kind of energies are you sending out into the world? So you might be talking again about how you really want to see peace, but then you rage drive, and what are you sending? You know, something tangible, thoughts or things from a shamanic point of view, and what are
right.
you sending? What energies are you feeding the world with, yourself? Because whatever you send out to others, you're sending back to yourself again. So what are you? What energies are you feeding yourself, your loved ones, coworkers, and the world? And not to repress your feelings and the emotions that you have, it's really important to express. But from a shamanic point of view, there's a big difference between expressing and sending. And mm-hmm. we don't know the difference in this culture. So to acknowledge your feelings and then with intention to ask that the energy behind that emotion be transmuted, transformed to a loving energy that feeds yourself and the rest of the planet. And then another part of that is when you look at who we are, we're actually spirits, and we're clothed by our body, and when you take away the body and you take away the mind, we're actually spiritual light. And
mm-hmm.
we've gotten so attached in our culture to feeding, you know, what we're good at on a mental level, that we forget about our own spiritual light. So
mm-hmm.
creating a practice in your life, again, it doesn't matter what spiritual path that you choose, of being able to go inside and experience your own starlight that radiates like the stars in the night sky.
Mm-hmm.
Some traditions actually teach that we're walking stars
mm-hmm.
on this planet Earth. And dreaming, using your imagination to dream, to see, hear, feel, taste, smell, step into the dream that you wish for yourself and the world around you. And, you know, to really spend time with dreaming practices. We need dreamers for the world right now. So, you know, this is just kind of a summary of different practices that people can engage in that really change your perception and help you to feel empowered and not at a loss for what can I do? I'm only one person in a world that's out of control right now. What can I do? And engaging in spiritual work is where you can feel power and where you actually do make a difference in what happens, because whatever changes inside of you ends up rippling throughout the entire web of life
mm-hmm.
and creates positive change for the planet.
Oh, absolutely. So if you want to take it as simply as, you know, cleaning your inner house,
mm-hmm.
it could be you could take on a project of doing a spring cleaning as part
right.
of your inner cleansing. And it's amazing the reflections that will come back from newspapers and articles, and you'll notice a little thing about permaculture or something. And it's quite fun to see when you actually do take the steps and work on yourself. And there's so many different ways you can do the inner work.
Mm-hmm.
But and it all comes back. And then if you're present to it, the message is always clear.
Right. And if you start with one simple thing, I think that what happens with some people who start to engage in spiritual work is in some ways people can take on too much at the same time. Or, you know, people start to try and become aware of their daydreams or their thoughts or words, and then they slip, which we all do. and they go, well, this isn't working. But, you know, I try to talk about it as like going to the gym, but you have to build up spiritual muscles where, you know, you start with really small weights. You start with one practice, and you start to get stronger spiritually, and then all of a sudden you notice that you're in the swing of a positive habit in your life. And one time I journeyed to my power room. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and, you know, I grew up in a very traditional family and reactive and, you know, react to things pretty quickly. And so many, many years ago, I said to my power animal, I'm just not getting this fast enough. And he looked at me and he said, what else do you have to do with your life? And I thought that was a really good line of, you know, have compassion with yourself that, yeah, you know, there are days where maybe you can have one good thought, really positive thought or really positive dream in the day, and then the next day you find that you can loop more thoughts and dreams and you find yourself becoming stronger, and then you go out and you smile at somebody, a stranger, and you start to talk to people online at the grocery store or at the bank where the energy's dense, and you start to brighten people by your presence. You know, these are really small things, and we don't realize how much they make a difference.
And they may be the things that really count in the end.
Well, they are. When you talk, I've worked a lot with people who are dying, and when you talk to people at the end of their lives, it's really amazing how it's the small things they remember, the time that a funny experience happened on a bus or a really sweet exchange happened with a stranger. That really is the thing, what really impacts people at the end of their life. You don't hear people say, I wish I worked harder, or I wish I worked more. You hear people talk about the things that really touch them in their lives, and typically it's really simple events.
And it's funny, in a near-death experience, often when somebody has a life review, they come back and say, well, I learned that I wish I had done all the things that I was afraid to do because I thought that I would be judged for it, and there wasn't any judgment.
Exactly. Yeah.
I could have had a much different life because the world was free to me to explore, and I didn't do it because I thought it was wrong or I was going to be in trouble, and, you know, and I wasn't. There was nothing like that.
I had three near-death experiences in my life, and in one of them, I went to a great being who I call God. God didn't have a form. It was just this unbelievably brilliant, brilliant light. And God was just pulsating. I was standing next to people, and people who had done what we would judge as horrific things in this lifetime. But God didn't recognize any of us as a personality. God just beamed unconditional love. And it was a real teaching of, yes, it doesn't mean that it doesn't matter what actions, you know, and how you behave in the world, but there is a transcendent spiritual viewpoint of unconditional love. And that this life is about gaining lessons and not about being judged. And it's really an amazing experience. I one of the exercises that I give people, and anybody listening can try this, is to put on some nice music, expansive music, meditative music, and to ask to meet your creator. And, you know, we have, you know, because of all the different religious beliefs, you know, to go outside your religious beliefs and really ask to meet your creator or creative force of the universe. And once you meet your creator and learn about your creation story, a little bit about how the creator created form in the world, is to just experience the love that went into your creation. And that has been so healing for some of my students who suffered abuse on many different levels, to actually experience the love that they went into their creation. Some people have completely turned their lives around from being able to get that experience.
Wow. Well, this is, we're almost out of time, and so that seems like the perfect place to segue off the show. It was a beautiful, beautiful statement, and something that we can all do.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for being on the show, and if you could mention your website again before we go, and if you have any parting words.
Well, my personal website is www.sandraingerman.com, and I've got articles and things that people can just peruse about shamanism, and I also write a monthly column that I haven't missed a month since 1998, and I just try to keep people inspired to keep up their spiritual work no matter what's happening. I also have a website, shamanicteachers.com. And on that website, I list hundreds of shamanic practitioners and teachers around the world who can perform shamanic healings or teach shamanic methods. And that's a website people can go to. And basically, the message that I have for people is to open up to the love of the invisible realms. There are so many helping, compassionate spirits who really want to guide us and help us to heal right now, and that the spiritual work that we do really does make a difference in creating a positive change in the world for all of life.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Sandra. I just love talking to you, and I love the work you're doing, and
thank
I really
you.
Appreciate you coming on tonight and sharing your experiences with us, and
I'd
love to have
for
you
the
back
brilliant,
again, too.
Absolutely, and thanks for the brilliant work you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. All right. Well, that's a wrap, everybody. Good night, and stay tuned.